Yeah.
Hi, Murugya. We can hear you.
Good. So we'll just start in 2 minutes. The participants are joining.
Okay.
I think Molly is then joining. We can start the call.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining in such a volatile day. We have Chaitanya Desai, Managing Director of APAR Industry, and Ramesh Iyer, CFO of APAR Industry, on this Equirus virtual conference of 2022. First, management will spend some time on giving the business outlook and the strategy on APAR Industries. And after that, we will have a Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. I'd like to first thank all the participants for joining. And if I may start with a quick overview of the company products. First division I'd like to mention about is the conductor division, where we are making the conventional conductors, then we are making the high temperature, low sag, or the high performance conductors. Then we are making the optical fiber cables, optical fiber ground wire, sorry. And then the copper railway conductors, then the conductors used in the transformers called the CTC. And some of these products we are taking on a turnkey solution basis. Over the years, we have been concentrating on more value-added products and made significant investments in this division. We also have a factory next to the Hindalco for the molten aluminium supply. And over the years, we have also moved into the services segment, particularly for the high-performance conductors and the OPGW. In the last 2 years, there has been the railway electrification work. So we have entered into the copper railway business, and now there is new products for the higher type of higher speed trains, the copper magnesium and the copper alloy types. As far as the CTC for the transformer industries, we are relatively new in that business, but this is also one of the more value added products used in the substations. These transformers are used in the substations in the power sector. And currently we are selling in the domestic market, and gradually our intention is to bring some of these newer products, including the CTC and the copper railway products and OPGW, in the export market. We're already doing a fair amount of export business of the HTLS and the high performance conductors, and that will continue. We are also seeing a fair amount of growth in some of the Western markets with this China Plus strategy. So that is also helping in improving the margin levels for the conductor business overall, and also is the case for the cables. For the oil business, our main bread and butter product over the years has been the transformer oil. But over the years, we have also diversified there into white oils, which are used in pharmaceutical hair and care applications. We also make the various industrial and process oils, including the process oils used in the tire industry. Then we make industrial and auto lubricants, which is a B2C type of business. And then we have other premium products that we have introduced in the transformer industry with the ESG initiative and also petroleum jelly products. We also have a factory in the Middle East besides the ones in India. The Middle East is the Hamriya plant, where we are making the transformer oil, white oils, and other various type of base oils. So those products we are catering to in the GCC market and the African market primarily. Moving on to the cable business, which we acquired some 15 years ago, approximately. We have the power cables, HT and LT, And also recently we have launched the electron beam based house wires, which we have called the Apar Anushakti brand. We also have the elastomeric cables, which are used in the renewable, like wind and solar, in a big way, besides, of course, other applications in railways and defense. We also have the electron beam as a service for various other industries. So they bring their products and we e-beam and do it as a service for them. Then another product line is the optical fiber cables. And because we have both power and other various type of cables, telecom, instrumentation, we are able to make various specialty hybrid cables. So a lot of emphasis we have been putting for the cable industry, and we have been investing a fair amount. And even in the years to come, we see a lot of traction on this front. Here again, there is a China plus strategy going on, where a lot of exports to the Western part of the world is helping us to increase our business for the cables. We are setting up more e-beams and also CCB lines to cater towards the renewable energy sector. And that is one of the major focus for us. So this is a nutshell about our various products in the company. And with this, if I may open up for question and answers, please.
Yeah, thanks, Chaitanya sir. If anyone have any questions, we can go ahead. Please raise your hand for the questions. Yeah, Mihir, you can go ahead.
Hi, thanks for giving the opportunity and thanks for the presentation, sir. Sir, I largely wanted to understand on the profitability side. I mean, you know, how is the profitability difference different in the high value segment in the conductors versus the normal products that we are having? And also related question to that was, you know, how to understand the profitability, the EBITDA per metric ton for the conductors in the oil and lubricant division from here on? I mean, you know, how does the pricing mechanism work, or what kind of number should we have a confidence on? Is it more related to commodity prices and something like that, sir? So largely in that context.
Yes. So in the conductor business, almost all the business is going on the basis of the London Metal Exchange pricing. And then on top of that, we are charging the premium or the conversion cost plus profit. So that is the model which we use for our various pricing. Of course, in a lot of the businesses, we just have to declare a final price. We don't have to give the breakup. And in some cases, we have a price variation formula where we use the LME as a base for the pricing. And in terms of the margins, definitely the conventional conductors has been relatively lower margins compared to the various value-added products that I covered, whether it is the high-performance conductors or the copper-related products like railways and the CTC and also the OPGW. So these in terms of volumes are much smaller, and metric ton-wise it is smaller, but the rupees per metric ton margins is much more. So over the years, we have been giving like a weighted average figure for the EBITDA per ton basis. And recently we were discussing also that since the interest rates have been increasing, we have been increasing our, you know, prices accordingly. So another method for measurement could be the earnings before depreciation, tax and amortization. And that figure we have been talking about is in the tune of 12,000 rupees to 14,000 rupees and is gradually increasing, because what we have been trying to do is reduce our emphasis on the conventional conductors and concentrate more towards the export and the value-added products. So that is bringing our weighted average EBDTA to a higher level.
Yeah, correct. So those that metrics we are planning to start from Q2 onwards, as we feel that interest for our type of business is like any other factors of production. And the way we look at raw materials and labor costs and power costs, in the same way we look at interest costs. Therefore, we look at start to look at the EBDT as a measure, hopefully from Q2 onwards. So coming back to your question, it's difficult to get to an exact differential between the conventional and the premium conductors, because we are into order business, and these are all design specific orders that we get from customers. So it's not a fixed thumb rule that you can apply for arriving at a difference between the conventional and the premium conductors. Also, what is happening is that over a period of time, our export in conventional conductors is also increasing. So that also gives us a slight better margin than the domestic conventional businesses. So there's a combination of many factors that gets into the EBITDA, and you know, a full time period of 12 months is what could be good relevance to see what could be projected in future.
Sure. I mean, so just an extension to that, should we see the normalized numbers will be higher than what they were historically, given the fact that, you know, share of premium products is going up?
Yeah, as you see this trend going up, you will see the margins going up. At some point of time, once the trend stabilizes, then the margin also will get into a more stability mode.
We are in a state of flux in that sense, because we have invested a lot in various products, new products. And while there are some parts of the factory which is fungible, so our concentration is how to load our plant with more value-added products and reduce out the proportion of the less valuable product. So accordingly, the rupees per ton figures will increase, but the overall absolute term figures also should increase. And our concentration is not so much in terms of the volume as much as the profit margin part.
Sure. Yeah, that's helpful. And on the oil side, I mean, how is the profitability over there? I mean, how does the pricing happen? And how should we see the EBITDA per metric ton over there?
So the overall oil business has been having high profitability and margin for the last 2 years. Even if you look at the first quarter, it has been a very high number. Of course, we already mentioned during the first quarter earnings call that there could be pressure going forward as we see oil prices increasing, and also customers putting resistance due to increase in oil prices. So overall, we do give a guidance about 5,000 to 6,000 per kiloliter for oil margins that we believe should be from a 12-month perspective. Of course, during the quarter, some of the quarters you will see high margins, some of the quarters you see low margins, because the oil price itself is very volatile and there's no way to hedge the oil price. Therefore, you may see a quarter on quarter movement, but on a 12-month period, we expect about 5,000 to 6,000 per KL as our EBITDA numbers.
Sure. And just lastly, one question, I mean, before I enter back to the queue. As on the cable side, you mentioned about, you know, some of the approvals that you have got specifically in the US and for the renewable energy side. If you could throw some light, I mean, you know, how will the revenue pan out here? How big is the opportunity? And how are we targeting this particular segment? Especially, I mean, renewables energy or Western world?
So, a couple of things we are seeing happening on a global thing. One is the infrastructure spends generally across the globe is increasing, and that gives us opportunity for us to tap these markets there. And also the space in the renewables is going up with the focus on clean energy and green energy. It's giving a lot of opportunities for us. And we happen to be in a good position because in India, we are the number one when it comes to the renewable space, the solar and wind. So our ability to tap these opportunities appear much better than some of the other players. Also, since the last year, mostly by the second half, our share in the exports within the cable division has gone up. So we do see good potential coming in from our overseas geographies for our cable business.
Sure, yeah. That's it from my side. Thank you very much.
If anyone have any questions, please raise your hand. Meanwhile, I will ask a few questions. Basically, on the cable side, where we have entered into this consumer business, B2C business over the last couple of months, and also strengthen the team you have a couple of hires from the industry. How it is going up, and what are the specific targets you have in the mind for achieving a certain revenue? How you are doing it? And in terms of profitability, is the profitability of Anushakti is significantly higher at a, let's say, gross margin? Because we understand the business is still currently in the build-up phase, so you have a lot of overhead right now. But on the gross margin side, is it significantly higher than the overall profitability of the cable business?
So overall, I think this particular segment, there's a unique reason where we are into this business. And, you know, as we see this particular segment, there's a gap in the customer expectations that we see currently. And for us, our product is a very unique and differentiated product. It basically has two fundamental advantages that helps us to differentiate against other players in the market. One is that it has a much higher current carrying capacity. It can actually carry 50% more current than the existing players. Okay. And secondly, the insulation is such that it's very highly short circuit resistance. So, you know, when you actually combine these two aspects, it has a good technical performance and gives us a very unique and differentiated product to capitalize upon. And it actually runs through our e-beam process, and we are the only player in this segment having e-beam based product for this LDC segment here. So we were already there in the Kerala and Gujarat market over the last 3 years or 4 years or so. And we have been seeing good responses in that limited geography we are in. And this year we are actually expanding to more southern states and more north and eastern part of the country. And over a period of time, we'll see our presence actually growing up across the country. And in terms of margins, yes, we like to keep the price a bit competitive as well as a bit higher than competition because of the advantage that we have. But initially, we'll see a lot of spends going on at the local level to create awareness about the product, meet with the electricians to communicate how this product is superior than the other available products. So we'll see a fair amount of upfront investments going up in BTL as well as advertisement over there. But over a longer period of time, this would catch up with our the overall profitability which we'll get from this segment.
Got it. So I understand that in the last con call, Kushal bhai has mentioned about that current run rate is around 150 crore, and for the FY22, right? This year you are targeting is close to 250 or around 300, and the next year is around 500 crore target for this product. Is it, Alani, are you on track on that number?
So we are targeting about 500 crores by, you know, FY25-26 types. No, that's
okay, 25-26. Yeah. Okay. Not the next year. Okay, got it. And in terms of the cable business, the highest margin at an EBITDA level, which I think we have achieved is around 10%, right? Probably in the year FY19. Or year FY20, and then there was some kind of a dip in a subsequent year. Sorry, 11% margin which we achieved in an FY19 and 20, and then there was a dip in the last 2 years because of the pandemic and the copper pricing moving much higher, where we took some of the heat on our fixed price contract. But now, I mean, what kind of a margin? Because this B2C business, which is again picking up for that. What kind of margin we are envisaging in next 3 years? And will it go to the 11% and much more than that? Or is it like, because we are investing significantly in a brand right now, it will be still around 10 to 11% kind of in a range?
So this, our aspiration is to get into this double digit EBITDA for our cable business. And we have achieved it in the past. So there's no reason why we couldn't get into that thing.
Sure.
Of course, you know, the COVID pandemic, because of that, our margins reduced. But if you see the last year, we were about 5-odd percentage. And if you break that into quarters, by quarter four FY22, we were close to 7%. Quarter one FY23, we were about 7.5%. So that it's kind of getting settled at 7-7.5%. We expect that this year we would be close to about 8 to 8.5% based on what we see coming for the year. And maybe over the next couple of years, we see that, you know, getting into double digits easily, that will increase our margins. And also the upfront investment on LDC will not be a big dent from the entire cable business point of view, because the volumes are still small as compared to the overall B2B business that we have. And also, as we see good export opportunities where the margins may be better, overall my profitability would be much higher than the upfront investment that we are doing on the LDC business.
Got it. And on conductor business, Chaitanya sir, we have seen like this business has always been very volatile from a volume perspective. There were the years that we grow 30%, probably next year that goes in the down 20%. If you look at the number, I think FY18 or FY19, APAR achieved around 1.8 lakh ton kind of on a volume on annual basis. This year, probably the guidance which you gave that in the previous con call was around between 1.3 to 1.4 lakh. In the same time, the focus has been on the more on the profitability and value-added products and not more on the volume. Our EBITDA per ton has seen significant jump from 10,000-12,000 rupees to 17,000-18,000 rupees right now. And we understand that you continue to focus on a value side. But is the market for the values expanding at a much, much faster pace than the traditional, number one? Number two, we have seen a lot of this government making some initiatives on reducing the deficit, or I think that I will say that improving the power sector's finances. Do you see any scope for the distribution companies or the SEBs to start doing some kind of capex on a conductor side or the transmission line side? And are they going to more on the traditional, or is it going to be more on the value-added products which you have developed over the last many years?
Yeah. So on your first point, I agree. There had been a fair amount of volatility on the volume side in the conventional conductors in the past. Mm-hmm. And definitely during COVID, things were hit, you know, because a lot of infrastructure spend was getting diverted to attend to the medical, you know, front. But and also projects were getting delayed, and procedural, you know, tender related things were getting delayed. So that is one thing which had happened. But now all that sort of pent up demand is coming back on track, you know, because all projects, people are working all over the world and want to finish their projects, you know. So that is one part of it. Then, as was discussed earlier, the renewable energy is a big driver to both the conductor and the cable business, and actually transformer oil also. So definitely we see a sustained demand going forward. Hopefully there should not be any such pandemic, you know, going forward, or any such disruption. So assuming that on one hand, and on the other hand, the products that we have introduced in the last few years, where we are starting off with a low base, and definitely we have a lot of scope to grow in India and then outside India as well. So that will also sustain the demand in terms of metric tons. And another part is that the demand for the type of conductors is also growing a little bit more on these value-added products, particularly where the clients are looking for a solution as opposed to simply a supply, because they are not just putting up new lines, they are also doing reconductoring of old lines to feed more power with the right-of-way issues. So these are some of the things which we are confident of, that the demand will be sustainable, and also of the value-added products with the trend which is going on with the urbanization and more power requirement in the cities. So that will also require the governments to do a lot of things in terms of, you know, augmenting the power supplies to the urban areas. This is one area. Secondly, on the renewable energy front also, it requires the grid connection. So that will also drive the demand. And also in terms of the type of products that the renewable energy requires, will be more robust type of products, because they need to, you know, take care of the surge requirements as more solar parks and the wind farms are added to the system. So instead of, you know, building up at every point a new infrastructure to connect to the grid, a lot of these developers are seeing this as long-term investment to put up a connection to the grid, which has the robust connectivity and which can take care of the future demand. So the nature of the product also, the requirement is also having a larger component of more value-added conductors like the high-performance conductors. In terms of the OPGW also, there is a fair amount of sustainable demand we see because of the digital initiatives and the connectivity to various parts of the villages, etc., in India. And also similar phenomena is going all over the world with transfer of data requirements. So they are finding it more convenient to kind of replace the earth wire with the OPGW, which gives a very good connectivity for various companies which are not only in the telecom providers but also other major corporates which need to have a transfer of their data going from one city to another city. So OPGW is one of the best ways to actually have the least attenuation losses. This is one sustainable demand we see there. Similarly, in some of the other products as well, where we have a low base currently, we see that the odds are that it's only going to increase in volume. We have built up the capacity, so definitely we'll be in a position to cater to those things as more approvals come through. Definitely in COVID, some of those new products took a little longer time to get approvals because the plant audits, etc., could not be done. But now those things are coming in place, and gradually we have got all the approvals from Power Grid, including the 765 kV approvals as well. So this is one question that you had with regard to demand. We see a very sustainable demand, and also I would add to that, even in the export markets, with the geopolitical situation and India being favorable in terms of supplies to the western part of the world, we see a lot of increased interest to buy from us. And also we have already been established in those countries. The country's requirements there are not just on price. They buy also keeping in mind the quality, service, deliveries, and they are very thorough in all their documentation requirements. So it's more a holistic kind of approach that these buyers abroad have, as opposed to in India, where it's a tender driven, simply on L1 type basis, the decision is taken for purchase. So what we can say is that this move from China, and also some of the European local players, even some of the American players, they are not equipped to take care of this sudden surge in demand which has come about. So the delivery schedule also for them is moving to after 1 year, and therefore these utility companies are forced to look at other options, and therefore they find in India already there is an existing good amount of capacity available, so they are coming more and more towards buying from people like us. So I see this as a sustainable demand actually for the conductor business, and also the move towards the more value added products that will continue. We are gradually reducing our emphasis on the local market. We had put up the factory in Orissa, keeping in mind the local demand, but some of that capacity also will be going in catering to the export market. We are generally agnostic as to where we will sell. We are trying to simply improve our margins by catering to the various geographies where we may improve our margins, and also various products which can give better value addition compared to the conventional local business. So this is in short, I think, on the question on the demand side. Sure. You also asked something else, if you don't mind repeating that.
Sure. So my only one thing, my question was on overall this SEB situation. Are you seeing any improvement on that side?
So on the SEB, the government of India, central government, has brought out this RDSS scheme, which will be a very huge investment, but it will benefit our cable business for sure, because a lot of it is for underground cables and a little bit is overhead type of conductors. And it will be for strengthening the state electricity board or the distribution segment. It will not result in the high performance conductor demand, that is being catered to by the state transmission companies. And this RDSS scheme is for the distribution companies only.
Got it. And you mentioned about is there any lot of shifting on orders from China to India? Any, obviously, you are being competitive on the cost side compared to the Chinese one. But is that the shift which we have seen in the last couple of months? And what you said about the new geographies are getting open, new customers are coming up. Is this across all the across the players in India? Maybe there are others who are also doing export of this, some of this conductor, or is this specific more to the APAR?
There are some percentage of export going by others, but we have the main business.
Sure.
And because we were already in this, for a long time, we have built up certain credentials in those markets. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, those countries, they don't go just on price, you know. Price is an important consideration, but actually it's not the most important. There are other aspects which they look into, you know. So, to get entry into some of these markets, customers take a lot of time. But once you're in, then they don't kind of change, you know. So other parties, whether they're in India or China and or elsewhere in the world also, we see this sustainable kind of demand going forward. Also, I'd like to mention that some of the geographies where we have not yet penetrated, we see a good potential in some of those markets as well. Besides, of course, the ones where we were already entrenched in. So there is a lot of scope, and everywhere in the world, we are seeing people slightly moving out of dependency on Chinese conductors and cables. So this phenomena, I think, will continue, and we will benefit from that. That also, we have been, wondering whether it was sustainable or not. And our feeling by talking to some of these clients is that the chances are that actually they want to consciously reduce their dependency on China. So earlier, if they were buying 100% from China, now, they started buying at least 10, 20, 30% from other countries. And they want to gradually reduce their further dependency on China as well. And if possible, bring it down to zero. We are also encouraged that some countries like Australia, where China and Australia have a 4% advantage because they have an FTA, still the Australian customers are finding that buying from India is a overall cheaper option and more value proposition. Not just from a price point of view, but also they have to make the timely supply for their projects. Then they cannot depend on supplies from China if there are disruptions in the supply, which may happen. So even from that angle, we find that they prefer to buy from India and from APAR more specifically.
If I understand very simple, that we are just entering into a very long-term trend, where the lot of geographies, particularly Europe and others, start get diverting their import from China to India and some of the countries. And we have just seen probably, let's say, 10 or 20% of the demand shift from China to the other nations. And still there's a long way to go. Is it in the right understanding?
Yes. Because some of these clients are systematic in their approach. They will go gradually up. They sure. will not put all their eggs in a new vendor's basket.
Sure,
they will want to test out and see how the overall experience with the client, with the vendor is. And then build that further, so that they can have a very sustainable, secured supply for their own requirements. So that is a trend which we are seeing, and we foresee that the percentage of business coming from these clients also will grow in year-to-year basis.
Good, great. And they are all likely in value-added products, right? Largely?
Both, actually. Conventional as well as value-added. Even in those countries, there is a similar trend of renewable energy and same issues of right of way, etc. So depending on their own planning, they have been buying some part of conventional and some part of value added products.
We have a next question from Manoj Bahety. Manoj, please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my question. Hi, Chaitanya.
Hi.
So I have two questions. Just a follow-up to the question which was earlier asked. So both on oil side and conductor side, we have seen significant increase in margins. And as you explained that on the conductor side, a part of this margin increase is also attributed to the product mix change. But even on the conventional side, is there a short-term margin jump? And what kind of normalized margin would you see on the conductor side? And oil side, I think you have already mentioned that 5,000 to 6,000 would be a normalized margin, right?
Yeah. Actually, what I can say is that, in the past, we have envisaged, how the situation is based on the current situation. And every quarter, we have been seeing actually improvement, at least on the conductor and cable side. So it's like a moving situation. And we are just sharing with you the way we see the marketplace, So and it is very encouraging, to say the least, especially with what I just explained on the various export markets and even the move away from China and a very big push also on renewable energy everywhere. So some part of it is on account of these trends. And of course, a little bit is on account of this Russia and Ukraine situation, which is causing a difficulty to the European producers. And therefore, the customers in Europe are also now of late looking more actively. But of course, we are in the process of getting more penetration there. It's not happened in terms of actual big business, but we see this is another big market which we were not having much presence in. But there is a possibility we may enter in a much bigger way in times to come there also. So we see that, these opportunities are there. And maybe the situation on the Russia-Ukraine may stabilize. But once we are in, then we may have some, decent market share going forward. And earlier, we were not getting much chance to get into those markets. But now we may, once being entrenched, we may have a better, sustainable demand. Because as I mentioned, these Western clients are not the type who give opportunity to many vendors, But when you do get a chance, then you are kind of in for a much longer period.
And these are like once you enter into that, these are long-term contracts or these are like the spot contracts. As soon as they get their original supplies back again, they can switch back.
So the nature of the businesses are two types. One is the EPC, which is a project-like type of business. So the EPC companies again, they once they have a comfort level with particular vendors, then conductor manufacturer, cable or oil suppliers, then they would continue to buy certain percentage of business from them. So somebody has to do something very wrong to kind of come out of that business later on, That is the nature of the relationship that continues on with these type of clients.
So you expect the margins on the conductor side will continue, right? Or even it can improve from here because of the product mix change, which is likely to continue, right?
Yeah. Product mix and geography mix both. Same for the cable also, the same thing.
Okay. And my second question is if you can elaborate a little bit more on your retail cable strategy, like how you are going to penetrate geographically, how you are going to build your distribution reach, the brand awareness, and secondly, how difficult it is to copy the superior features of our product, which we have introduced for the retail consumers.
So as I explained earlier, in terms of difficulty to compete with the other players, in our case, we have a very unique and differentiated product that I talked about just a while ago, which is an e-beam based product, and it has a higher current carrying capacity, and therefore to that extent, it's completely different product than what is available in the market. The way what approach, what we are trying to do is to educate the and bring awareness about this uniqueness to our consumers. And we have been doing that successfully in the Kerala and Gujarat market till now. And now we are expanding to other southern states, north and eastern states. And our strategy is to educate the consumers through various electrician meets that we have been doing that, to bring this awareness to them that how our product is different than the other products available in the market. Basically, this is as a high short circuit resistant and is able to carry 50% more current than the products that is available in the market. So our strategy would be to improve our reach in different states. We've commissioned a separate team within the APAR cable division who will exclusively look at this particular markets. A lot of ongoing BTL activities and brand awareness activities are going on. We recently signed up a new brand ambassador, Sonu Sood, for promoting this products in the market. And we'll see a lot of activities around this particular segment that will help us to improve the reach and penetration across the markets.
Sure. Thanks for taking my questions.
Yeah, we have a next question from Siddharth. Siddharth, please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Am I audible?
Yes. Yes, you are audible.
Yeah. So as you said, your contracts are priced based on the prices in LME. So is it fair to assume that we don't carry any inventory, risk of any inventory on our book? And also, is it that, despite very sharp volatility in metal prices also, EBITDA per ton will be in the current range? Is it fair to assume that? Because last couple of months, we have seen very sharp, unpredictable move on both the sides.
Yes, in the conductor and cable, there is no risk of inventory because all the orders are back-to-back completely by our hedge that we take on the LME. And to that extent, there is no inventory loss that we do. We have a very strong risk management strategy wherein we are able to completely hedge the aluminium and copper prices in the market. In terms of volatility, the price of aluminium is volatile, and so is the case with copper. And that's the reason this hedging strategy helps us, because it actually ensures that we are able to procure the material at the rate at which we accepted the order. And as we take this hedging position, once we accept the order, we are able to source the material at exactly at that price. And therefore, even though there are price volatility that happens, we as a company don't end up absorbing the gains or loss because it's all hedged in the LME.
Okay. So is it fair to assume that the current EBITDA will be the new benchmark for you for coming multiple years?
So we have given our guidance, and we keep on revisiting our guidance depending on opportunities that we see. The recent guidance we've already given as the end of Q1. That's what we expect going forward. But however, depending on how the situation pans out in the future quarters and the future years, we will keep on revising depending on what we see as a realistic EBITDA margins.
Okay, sir. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. We have a next question from Levin. Levin, please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, on this, I had a question on the cable division. So we say that we have a 60% market share within the wind power. So what would be our market share into solar, and what kind of opportunity do you see both in domestic as well as exports market for the solar cable?
In terms of the solar cable market share, actually there have been new entrants, and our concentration has been also not to sort of just sell it as a commoditized kind of product. So our share in terms of market may have gone down, because earlier there were like three players, now there may be a couple of more players. So we are in the vicinity of about 20-odd% market share. In the case of the solar cables in the Indian market, but we are now trying to export a lot of these products also. And there we have basically just touched the tip of the iceberg, and we feel there is a huge scope
And as we discussed earlier, concentration is how to improve our overall netback as opposed to be committed to only a Indian market, which may not give us that kind of margin that other geographies may allow us to do so. So our concentration is not just to increase our market share in India, but to grow in the world markets. And also we are putting a lot of new investments for some of these products which have a little differentiated requirement with other type of certification, which is a barrier of entry to those markets. So even the compounding is a very special type, for these markets. So we have been actually concentrating on building our business in those markets as opposed to the Indian, which is a little commoditized case. Like in the case of the conductor also, we have a conventional type conductor. Same way, there is a commoditized type solar, which is in the Indian market. So our concentration has been how to increase our share outside India.
Right. Sir, and will it be fair to assume that within the cables division and the elastomeric as well as the solar cable, the margins would be better than the segmental margins overall that we report?
Yeah, relatively that will be better than the other segments.
Sure. And sir, lastly, just to understand the kind of opportunity that we might see in renewables, both domestic as well as exports, what kind of cables are required per megawatt of installation? Any thumb rule so that can give us some sense about the opportunity?
So what we are seeing generally is in big projects, the cable part is roughly 5% or so of the project cost. So if suppose the RDSS scheme of Maharashtra is say 40,000 crores investment, then maybe 5% of that will be cable requirement.
Okay, so these are all design specific special application products. So it's difficult to actually get on to exact number because there are a huge amount of industries that we cater to, and different products have different applications. So depending on the requirement of the customer, your design actually gets finalized. So it's actually a bit difficult to put exactly a number how you can get into that. But yeah, it depends on the specification and the design requirements.
Sure. What I generally meant is that if we look at the exports opportunity, like everybody is talking about big numbers in terms of renewables over next 3-5 years, be it US, Europe. And like you also said that we have just started to look at those markets or just started supplying. There is going to be a huge requirement of cable over there as well in the exports market. So just wanted to understand what kind of opportunity size we may have in next 3-5 years.
Yeah, so if you look at overall, the global market is much bigger than much times bigger than the Indian market. So, and with all this China plus one strategy, all the spends of infrastructure that is going to increase over the years, and all the renewables put together, the opportunity and the market is much more. Now, how we companies are becoming ready to adapt to this product requirement, the customer specifications, the customer approving the company's technical specification, etc., will play a role in terms of how do we gradually grow the business from here. And that will be true for many other players as well, but different companies will have uniqueness in terms of how to tap these opportunities that is coming through.
Sure. Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Yeah, we have a next question from Mihir Manohar, please.
Thanks for giving the follow-up. I had two questions. First was on the CapEx. I mean, are we looking at any capacity expansion in these verticals? And second thing was on the payables side. I mean, out of the 4,000 crores payables that we are having, are they completely interest-funded, interest-bearing, or how is it? I mean, I wanted to understand the working capital funding.
So the CapEx, we already have given our number for FY23. It's about 150 odd crores that we plan to spend in FY23. About 2/3 will be coming in the cable division. And in terms of your payables, The way we look at our payables is that it's completely for working capital purposes, and out of, I'm not wrong, about 2000 or 2500 or should be for interest bearing as on the March end. And we look upon the entire payables completely from interest as any other cost of production. So for us, what happens is that all this interest gets into the price of my customers. We actually calculate the interest for our suppliers outstanding and then accordingly price it to our customers. So in a way, your interest is looked upon as any other cost of production. And that's the reason even earlier that we talked about whether for our company, whether EBI, DTA or EBDTA should be a better basis, because barring the fixed interest bearing loan that we have on the borrowing, there are no other loans on the balance sheet, and all this are working capital, which gets into our pricing when we bill it to our customers.
Sure. So is it like the payables become interest bearing after 3 months, or how does it
work? Yes, correct. That's after 3 months it becomes.
Okay, sure. And just lastly, I mean, you gave the capex for FY23, but anything on FY24? I mean, for the last 5 years combined, we have done 880 crores kind of in capex. So, I mean, any indication of the next 3 to 5 years? How are we looking at this number?
As the opportunities are surfacing, we are also, investing to avail of those opportunities and build the capabilities with the more value-added, offerings from our side. So it may be difficult to give you a number, but it looks actually that, there is a lot of potential for us to grow, and with marginal investment and to take avail of our infrastructure and a good, access to certain markets and to grow them in a much bigger way. So accordingly, I think the investment trend, the way the things are going right now in the western part of the world, and also renewable push and the China plus one type strategy, and even with the European high cost of energy, etc. So those things are encouraging and would suggest that there is a good potential for us to grow even beyond our existing year's plans. And accordingly, we will keep on debottlenecking wherever necessary to avail of those opportunities.
Sure. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you very much for the answer, and thanks for giving the opportunity.
Yeah, I have one question. There are two trends. One is that the LIBOR is moving up. So will that increase our interest cost? The second time, the commodity prices are coming down, particularly copper, aluminum, and also the oil in the last couple of weeks also. So that also reduces our working capital. So given this one, will we see an increase in our overall interest cost going ahead?
Yeah, in fact, there is one more vertical to that. Even the exchange rate also is going up. So, our interest cost is a combination of your, as you rightly said, SOFR going up, the prices of aluminium and copper being volatile, and also exchange rate going up, and also the quantum that we procure in a particular quarter. So it's a mixture of all these four variables that actually end up determining the interest cost. So all this will influence the interest cost, and therefore it's difficult to see which one will weigh more than the other, because it's so many moving parts to that. But directionally, we really see that interest costs would be on a higher side. Your rates are going up, and also exchange rate is going up, and we are actually seeing a higher interest cost in times to come.
But when we are pricing our product, we are factoring these costs, and our competitors are also in the same boat, so to speak. Sure. So everyone will be considering the same costs, sure, of the commodity or the interest costs.
That's true. I think you mentioned it earlier also that because there's a very long cycle, right, from the product, the raw material procurement to the dispatch and the billing. It's in a long cycle to that. So probably I think it's a good way to look at the numbers that in an EBDT way rather than an EBIT way. And exactly. That can give probably a better picture to the investors from looking at a business on a trend long-term perspective.
Correct.
Yeah. We agree. Yeah, one more question on so not many people have spoken on oil segment per se. I think the more excitement is currently on the cable and the conductor business. But any given that and also Kushal Bhai in earlier con call gave a commentary that TSO did a lot of job of heavy lifting in the last 2-3 years where the conductor and cable were suppressed because of the COVID pandemic and other things. Now in coming years, 1 or 2, the cable business, the TSO segment will probably go on a relatively small growth and lower growth compared to the last 2-3 years of growth. Is it because of the market is saturated, or is it because of we are run out of the capacity at UAE where we are running at enough full and not looking to add the capacity? Or is it something that the focus of the company is much more to grow on the cable and conductor, and we don't want to chase the opportunity in the oil segment?
No, there's nothing about capacity. In fact, we have enough capacity to grow our oil business clearly. So that is definitely not a constraint. What is happening there with the increase in oil prices, you may find customers postponing their orders or pushing their deliveries because oil price being high, it also affects their cost, because finally we pass on the increase in oil cost to our customers.
Sure.
So, that's where we felt that the volumes could be coming under pressure for the year as a whole. Mm-hmm. Also, we are being very careful in terms of the customers to whom we want to sell. So our products mm-hmm. are approved across all the customers there which we have. But we want to be very careful in terms of whom we want to service, so that we don't want to end up chasing them for payments. Over the last 2-3 years, we have been we have actually removed about 30-odd% of our customers, and so that our DSO in the oil business has come down from 100 to 70-odd days. So we want to be very specific in terms of the customer profile which we are servicing. And given that, the comments that you said will be valid. But also I would like to say that as the level of infrastructure increases, as there's more transmission capacity getting added, that more and more transformers will be needed. And out of our oil business, about 1/3 is for transformer oil. And you will see a high requirement for the transformer oil business to cater to these increased infrastructure spendings and also the new transformers that will be coming.
Got it. Any other questions any participants have? I think that's all. Thanks, Chaitanya Bhai. Thanks, Ramesh, for participating in our conference. You have always been APAR has always been in a great help in Equirus, and it's been a privilege to track the APAR for the last almost 10, 12 years since we have been tracking it. Thanks for coming. Thank you. And thanks to all the participants.
Thank you.
We may end the call now.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.